Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to Chicago. In a few moments, we'll have James Franklin's press conference from earlier today. Spring practice getting underway for the Nittany Lion football team. We'll hear from the head football coach of the Nittany Lions in just a few moments. Penn State, one of only six teams to be in the top 15 in the final college football playoff rankings in each of the last 3 years. Only six. Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Washington, and Penn State are the only six to do it. And trying to see if they can do it again this year with a new quarterback. And spring drills, while not answering that question, will be very, very interesting for Penn State. James Franklin in a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. In championship week, so many great plays happen. And it doesn't have to just be the championship game. Oakland thought they were on the verge of going to the Horizon title. Northern Kentucky took it at the wire.
They're 9 seconds away from going to the championship game in the Horizon League.
This guy's going to get to the rim on a running start.
McDonald for the win! He got it! Drew McDonald sends the Norse to the championship game in the Horizon League.
And remember, they had shooters on the floor. He draws two, and McDonald, who we watched today, he was like on eggshells at practice. Take a look. Pick and pop, great rhythm, Motor City Madness.
And here's the reaction after the biggest shot of his career goes through, sending Northern Kentucky to the championship game.
Indeed, great moments on championship week. Will Bucknell have one of those great moments tonight? We'll find out beginning at 7:30. Doug on Eagle 107 gets things rolling at 7 o'clock tonight. We're looking forward to that. So that's our play-by-play call of the day. James Franklin, Nittany Lion football, only six teams have been in the final college football playoff rankings in the top 15 the last 3 years. Only six have been in the top 15 in each of the last 3 years. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Washington, and Penn State. The head football coach of the Nittany Lions, James Franklin.
Hey, James, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, last year you talked a lot about Micah and saying there were areas that he really had to develop outside of just football. How has he come along football-wise and in those areas that you were hoping that he would kind of address as a young guy?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we're all growing. You know, I think, you know, let me start by saying that. I think you better have a growth mindset the rest of your life. As coaches, as players, all of us, you need to be constantly growing and trying to get better and evolve. That's as football players, that's as football coaches, that is as students, that is as parents, that is as brothers, dads, whatever it may be. You need to be getting better, all of it. Dealing with the media, every area. And I think Micah is like that. I think, you know, early on, obviously, we knew Micah was extremely talented. But when you're asking a guy to play a different position than he played in high school naturally, that was going to take some time to do that. Obviously, extremely talented, but from a fundamental standpoint, he had some things to catch up on. And then all the stuff away from the field. He's been phenomenal. He really has. He's been phenomenal. And I say that, you know, for all our guys. I think last semester, I think he got a 3.56. And I think that's the last two semesters. He's done extremely well. He's very coachable. He's got a very strong relationship with the coaches. He's in my office all the time. He's in Pry's office all the time. We do workouts. He's mad when he's not chose to compete. I think, you know, he came in here such a high-profile guy that I think some people had a perspective about who and what he was going to be. And, You know, our guys on a team love him. He's been a great teammate. I've gotten really good feedback from different things that we've had on campus, from professors, from, you know, different trainings that we do with the freshmen, a lot of different things. I've been very impressed. We've got a very close relationship with mom and dad and his high school coach, which I think is helpful as well because we're kind of all in this journey together. It takes a village. But I think he's doing a really good job, and I think that was a big reason for us not starting him last year. We just wanted to take kind of some of that pressure off him. There's already enough pressure on these guys, especially the high-profile guys. I've been very pleased with him, but it's a work in progress for all of them. I got 120 18 to 22 year old males plus two daughters. They're getting older every single day, which scares the heck out of me. We went bowling on Sunday, and my daughter took the ponytails out and went to, and got her hair straightened and blown out. It scared the hell out of me, to be honest with you. They're like, my daughters are growing up, but you know, I got 102 kids that I'm responsible for, and I'm very proud of what they're all doing, all of them. You know, it was pretty cool yesterday. A bunch of the guys came back for pro day, and we're all in the facility. Trace is there, and Nick Scott's there, and John Thomas. A bunch of guys are back for pro day, and Nick Scott goes, "Hey, is it okay if I go see, you know, Addy at school?" You know, so. It's really cool, and there's some of the cultural things that we've built from a family perspective that I'm really proud of. I really am. But I know that was a long answer, but I'm proud of Micah. I'm proud of all of our guys. It's not always perfect, but I see tremendous progress being made.
Yeah, James, you said in the past that it's tough to evaluate the safety position in the spring, especially early, given the lack of hitting. But what are your thoughts on that group as you look to replace Nick? And then with Jonathan, do you see him as a guy who will contend for that spot, or are you going to keep him more of as a box safety like Garrett?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think we got a group of guys that, you know, that we feel good about. The way we have it right now at free safety, we got Taylor Sutherland, Neff and Romano at that position, the way we have those guys rank. And then at the strong safety, which for us is really like the field safety, got the boundary safety and the field safety, you got Wade, Patrician, Rudolph, and Hartlop. But as you know, they're moving parts. So if you're the backup at the one, but you're one of our two best safeties, we'll move it around and plug and play. But I think you are right. There's some aspects where we like to drop one safety into the box more and play to their strengths. That's something that Sutherland does extremely well. And I think, like all of them, you know, and all of us, there's strengths and there's weaknesses. And we're trying to play to their strengths as much as we can, but also work and groom and help them grow with their weaknesses. So we're really excited about what Wade's done, you know, this offseason. Really excited about what Patrician has done. He's healthy probably for the first time in his career over a length of time. And Sutherland just continues to show up and make plays in a lot of different areas on defense, special teams. So it's going to be great competition. You know, you got Rudolph who came in here mid-semester, so it'll be interesting to see what he does as well. So we feel good about the group. And then we still got Brisker coming in who blows me up constantly. I mean, he is, during the national championship game, he's sending me messages. Same thing with me, Coach Pry, and Coach Banks. I got a message from him yesterday morning, his workout videos. He's excited. I think he's coming up this weekend to be around it as much as he possibly can. So we've got to feel like we got a good group, but obviously we've got to answer some questions.
This is your first spring camp that you've gone into with redshirt freshmen who have actually played in games. Curious on your evaluation assessment of what that does for player personnel through one season of that new rule, and if you have any particular adjustments that you may make to your approach in 2019 with the redshirt rule.
Yeah, you know, I think you got a couple different things. I think, you know, college football right now is, I think, at a really interesting time in our history. A lot of the different things that are being discussed nationally, a lot of the court rulings, a lot of the NCAA rule changes has really changed a lot of different things for us. All these guys, you see them commit and they say, which I, you know, I get it, but a lot of these guys commit. They say, I'm going to be at Penn State from 3 to 5 years. I mean, I get it. I want all these guys to be able to chase their dreams in the NFL, but I'm still a huge believer of the student athlete and our model, and it should be about getting the education first and then also being able to chase their dreams at the highest level. We want that for them as well. But my point is that that's always the hard balance now is do you play a guy as a true freshman? Because if you don't and you redshirt them, you may not have them for that fifth year. So, you know, did that make sense? I think the four games really help. I think the four games really help because maybe, you know, a guy can gain some experience or it saves you late in the season for injuries and things like that. I do think there's some flexibility that is created for us, you know, specifically with the redshirt guys. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think, you know, for example, with Rashid Walker, I think obviously he feels a lot different and we feel a lot different now. Although he redshirted, he got some game experience. So there's tremendous value in that. And I think, you know, there's a number of guys like that. So we'll see. I do think it creates confidence for those players, but I do think there's a lot of dynamics right now, you know, in college football and probably specifically in our program because we've improved dramatically in such a short period of time, especially on the way probably people nationally viewed our program 6 years ago, and then also the way recruiting has changed dramatically, that it really changes how you have to manage your roster and your team. I think it's helpful. There's no doubt about it, but there's also some challenges that come with it too.
You've lost some very strong leadership the last 2 years. Now with Trace gone, where do you expect that leadership to come with this young team?
I think it's early to say that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. What I would say to you is I do think one of the things that I know I want to do this year and moving forward, we'd always gone with two captains on offense, two captains on defense, two captains on special teams. Talking to the team in our off-season studies and conversations, we only had the three captains last year. And I know that's a model that a lot of people use, but I feel like we need more. We need more of that strong leadership, more captains, more players that can relate to more captains. You're going to have some guys that relate to some groups, and you know we got a diverse team, so I think that's going to be important. If we have the ability to go back to two captains on offense, defense, and special teams, I think there's a lot of value there. You know, right now, obviously, Fries has played a lot of football for us. Minnett has played a lot of football for us. Gonzalez has played a lot of football for us. Those guys are going to have to bring, a lot of leadership value to our team. I think a combination of Freiermuth, although he's young, he's played a lot of football for us, and Bowers are going to need to do it. And then at the quarterback position, you always need it there. So, obviously guys like Stevens, it always is going to start with your quarterback position. And Clifford, are two guys that have played a lot of football, been around a lot of football, been a part of the program, understand the expectations and the standards. And then I think the guy who, probably has as much energy and can affect, people in such a positive way as KJ Hamler. I think we all know you spend 5 minutes with KJ or his mom, they affect the room in a positive way. They walk in a room, they bright up the room with their energy and their charisma and the substance behind it as well. So, but we're going to have to develop it, because we are going to be young, but we're going to be talented.
Hey, James. How's it going?
Doing? Good.
I'm good. When you've got guys like Sean and Tommy that have been in the building for a long time, obviously you know them, but is there still sort of a, not a reset, but a recalibration of that relationship when you know one of them is going to be your starter? And by my count, this is the fifth time you've had a new quarterback going into the season. What have you sort of learned about that first year with a guy or the first couple weeks with a guy?
You talking about in my head coaching career? Yes, sir. I think in general, as a program, you better approach it that way every single year with your whole program. You can't just say, well, we're back and, you know, we're going to build on what we did last year. You got to rebuild it from the ground up every single year. But your point specifically to quarterbacks, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. When you got a guy like Trace that had started and played at such a high level for such a long time, that's a big transition. I don't think there's any doubt about it. The interesting thing is you got Tommy Stevens, who, you know, really 2 years ago did so many great and exciting things that everybody was buzzing about Tommy. And, you know, as you guys kind of know some of the details, you know, Tommy played through a, you know, fairly significant injury all last year, which affected him. So that in some ways was a blessing in disguise for Sean, because then Sean was able to gain some experience and did some really good things for us. But yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. As a coaching staff and as a program and as those guys, I think Tommy understands, hey, you know, I got to step into this role now. I have a responsibility not only to run the offense and to lead the offense, and understand that, you know, Trace had instant credibility with our team from what he had done the previous years. You know, Tommy understands it's his turn now to step up. Sean feels that way. And I also don't want to exclude Levis, because Levis is a guy that we think is extremely talented, and he's got to step up into it. So, you know, I think we're going to have really good competition in a lot of positions, but we will be inexperienced and young at some positions as well. And what I don't want to do, and I don't want, because I know our players listen to these press conferences and things, That's who we are. We embrace it, we accept it, and we're going to maximize this opportunity. And does experience count? Yes, it does. But I know there's a lot of excitement on our team and in our locker room and our offices about you know what we're going to be able to do.
James, with Tommy not being at the bowl game, just to clarify, will he be able to participate in the spring?
He will be able to participate. I don't know if it's going to be full go. We have, you know, again, I think when you guys ask me those questions, sometimes you think I'm not answering, but sometimes it's day to day. We're dealing with our own doctors and trainers on campus, but we're also dealing, he had the surgery off campus, so we're communicating with his doctor as well and trying to get everybody on the same page. So at this point, it'll be limited for the beginning of spring, and depending how spring goes and how he's doing, it could be full go by the end of spring, but I'm not sure of that yet.
And also, you mentioned a lot of some departures, and it seems like you've had a lot of staff turnover, support staff as well. Have you ever dealt with this much change? Do you think you're good at dealing with change?
Yeah, I think this is college football. I think, you know, we have dealt with this pretty much every year, you know, since we've been here. I dealt with this at the previous institution as well. Sometimes, obviously, you have it more than others. But, you know, for us, I'm excited for those guys. We got men and women that are getting promotions and having opportunities to take the next step in their careers, which is also part of my responsibility. Part of my responsibility is to not only help our players become the best students they possibly can be and have the best football experience and grow, you know, as young people, but it's also for my staff, you know. And to me, that's a tremendous, you know, that's a tremendous compliment to our program and to our university, that guys are able to come through, they're able to gain experience and able to take the next steps in their career. So selfishly, what I love for these guys to stay at Penn State and retire and watch their goatees get grayer at each press conference each year like mine is, yeah, I'd love for everybody to stay at Penn State forever, but that's just not the reality of our industry anymore. So I think we got to work really hard, administration as well as coaches, to create a situation here where people don't feel like they have to leave, that there's opportunities for growth. But then there's also going to be some times where, you know, people are going to have to move on, and hopefully we can bring them back at another point. So, you know, to me, it's the nature of our industry now, and we're going to embrace it, and we're going to make the best of it, and we're going to be prepared for when those times come. But I also want to make sure that when people do have those opportunities, that we make it difficult for them to leave and make it a challenging, at least, conversation.
How you doing, Coach?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, another Tommy question for you here. Given this era of, like, with player mobility and things like that, the transfer portal, et cetera, do you kind of have a new, like, a newfound appreciation for Tommy and his willingness to stay and, you know, and kind of wait his turn?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say newfound appreciation, because I think really what's happened with the transfer portal has been going on with quarterbacks for a while. Yeah, would you agree with that? I mean, that's been kind of the nature of the quarterback position for a while now. So I think when Tommy, you know, decided to stay, I think you guys know that was a big deal for us. Not just about him as a player, but also the relationship that we have with his high school coach and his parents and him, you know, that it worked out. And I think, you know, what we all hope is at the end of the day, it's a win-win for everybody. It's a win for Tommy and his family, and it's a win for Penn State. You know, that's what you're trying to create in life, is as many win-win situations as you possibly can. And then obviously, you know, maybe, I think I said this to you guys before, maybe the greatest tweet of all time that he sent out, you know, when he was staying with, I think it was the Wolf of Wall Street deal he tweeted out, which I thought was awesome. I don't, based on your expression on your face, I don't know if you liked it. But I don't know if that necessarily is different. I think your point, you know, with the situation we're in, I will tell you this, that we had a long discussion as a staff. I'm talking about months. And had a long discussion with the leadership council about the transfer portal. I wanted to hear their perspective, how our players saw it, which I think a lot of players across the country think it's the greatest thing that's ever happened since peanut butter jelly sandwiches. I think coaches understand the need for it, but also maybe have a different perspective. So I think it's always great to get in a room and have healthy discussion and dialogue and hear their perspective, but also have them understand an administrator's perspective or a coach's perspective and how to manage the roster and how can we come up with a plan that maybe there's some compromise on both sides about how we're going to deal with this moving forward. I've talked to a lot of coaches all over the country about how they're handling, and I think that's one of the bigger challenges with it, is the way it has been dealt with by the NCAA. Each school has their own way of dealing with it, which can be problematic, because now you kind of set up a policy at your school and they're buddies at another school and they're handling it different there. And well, how come they're... Well, each school is unique and each school is sophisticated. I think we're in a good place now. We've learned a lot going through it for the first time, like a lot of people across the country has. I've been able to lean on other coaches and call them and see how they're handling with it. And it is as wide range as you possibly could imagine in how different programs are dealing with it. But once again, it's where we're at. You better embrace it and you better move forward. I think the other thing on the other end that's challenging with it is, and a lot of schools are struggling with this too, is it's one thing to have your normal policies of how you accept kids from high school, but now this is spiking the transfer process. And how does your university handle the transfer policy, undergrad and grad school? What you're going to see across the country is you're going to see a larger number of transfers at schools that maybe haven't done that. But again, you're going to have to, and there's a new model. So that's created a lot of discussion for us with our administration and our university. How are we going to handle this moving forward? Because the model has changed, and we're going to have to change with it too.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports. sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, final half hour here in Chicago. Great to have you with us. Don't forget Bucknell basketball coming up tonight on Eagle 107. It'll be a 7:30 tip tonight at Colgate, and airtime with Doug Birdsong at 7 o'clock on Eagle 107 as Bucknell looks for its third consecutive trip to the NCAA tournament. But keep in mind, Colgate's won 10 in a row, and they are 14-1 at home this season. That is coming up tonight. Nittany Lion basketball here in Chicago tomorrow night when Penn State takes on Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament at 7. We're on beginning at 6:30, and yes, we'll be here for the show again in Chicago tomorrow. Looking forward to that. All right, James Franklin, we heard him in the previous half hour. More of him coming up, and also don't forget Joe Lorig is the new special teams coach. Back to the press conference at the Beaver Stadium media room.
Coach, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Good. You went to Texas Tech for about a month and change and then decided this was the right opportunity for you. What made you feel that way, and how difficult was that to sort of transition that quickly?
It was fairly difficult from the sense that I'd closed on a house about 2 hours before Coach Franklin called me, but no, just jokingly. So not difficult at all because of my relationship with Coach Franklin. Obviously, it's Penn State. It's an iconic program. So, and to be quite honest, without Coach Franklin, I probably wouldn't have left there. That's probably one of maybe two people in the country that I would have left. Matt Wells, who I'd worked for previously, for that situation. And from a logistical standpoint, it was tough. But from a decision-making standpoint, it was really pretty easy.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Curious what your initial thoughts on Jake Pinniger, your kicker. Came on pretty strong in Big Ten play last year. I think he had more 40-plus yard field goals than anyone in the Big Ten. A little rough in the Citrus Bowl in terms of his confidence, but sitting down, speaking with him, where do you feel like he is going into year number two, and how much of a weapon can he be for this team?
Well, I think he can be a tremendous weapon. You know, I was really impressed. One of the things that I try to do when I come in new somewhere is to not have preconceived notions, and also understand that guys as freshmen, it's hard to come in and start as a freshman, especially at this level. It's a pressure-packed situation. So I try not to have too many preconceived notions. I didn't look at all the kicking charts and all that kind of stuff that were done throughout the year. I did watch all the film, you know, for obvious reasons, so I know kind of what I'm walking into. But I was impressed with his approach. You know, I really wanted to find out, you know, you tell me where you think you're at. You tell me where you think you struggled. You tell me where you think the issues were. And I was impressed with with his response. I was impressed with that he didn't make excuses. You know, he took accountability for the things that he thought he didn't do very well at. And he was proud of the things that he did do well. And he has a good plan, in my opinion. You know, obviously I'll assist with it, but he's got a good plan of how he can get better.
Joe, can you describe your philosophy? What do you emphasize, those kinds of things with coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. So my mantra has changed the game. You'll see CTG on things around here. It's a trademark that I have. So special teams is going to impact the game every game, either positively or negatively, right? And, you know, clearly we want to have the positive side. But what we really, really, I was going to say try to do, but we don't try to do it. What we do, I've done it at multiple places, is we create a culture. And that's really the biggest difference. Everybody in the country, I just told the team this in my first meeting with them the other day, everyone in America, every team I've ever been a part of, they all talk about special teams. That everybody does. Almost nobody really does what they say they're going to do, right? And so, number one, it comes from the head coach. You know, you talk about making the decision. Coach Franklin supports special teams 100,000%. I wouldn't take a job where the head coach didn't. But then, you know, we do a lot of unique things. One of the things that we do that's really unique is we have individualized meetings, which that might sound like kind of a basic concept, but no one does that. So I try to model everything like you would offense or defense. I was a defensive coordinator for many years. And so when you have your defense, you don't meet every day as a whole defense, because the corners need to hear different things than the D-line, who needs to hear different things than the linebackers, right? You meet once in a while as a defense, but you meet most of the time individually. Well, on special teams, no one does that. They go in and they meet all together for 15 or 20 minutes or whatever it is every day. So again, I try to model it like that. So we'll have individualized meetings. So if you're in punt, you'll just be with your position group. Sounds like a little thing, but over the course of a season, the amount of individual attention that those guys get and the amount of them paying attention in the meetings because you're just talking about their position is exponential. And it gets all the other coaches and staff to buy in. Special teams can't be about me. It's not my deal. It's our deal. And when you get a collective group together like that, really special things happen.
How many hours do you think you watched a film on this unit from last year? And was there a glaring issue or two that really stuck out to you that said, hey, this is what we got to do?
How many hours? Well, I didn't have any spring break. I was up here way too much. So too many. You know, I felt like to get a good grasp on the team, I wanted to watch all offense, all defense, and all special teams just to kind of, you know, I was involved in my own season last year, so I didn't see Penn State very much, you know, so I always kind of follow it because of my relationship with Coach Franklin. But just as far as knowing the players and those kind of things, I wanted to watch everything. So I don't know, maybe 40 or 50 hours. I mean, that's what I did every day last week. So, and you know, I think there was some glaring things like balls being kicked out of bounds. You know, there was 6 balls kicked out of bounds last year on kickoff. That's a bigger number that I've seen. The missed field goals were almost all of them were from the exact same spot on the field on the right hash. So there was some things that stuck out. But to be honest with you, I saw a lot of really good things also. I mean, I know there was some issues of giving up a kickoff return for a touchdown, some things like that. But I saw a lot of really talented guys that play really hard. And that if you have that, you can build the culture that I'm talking about pretty easily, I think. And it's what I told the team the other day. The fastest way you can improve as a football team is in your special teams units. That's the fastest, easiest thing to improve, especially at a place like this where, as I said, it comes from the top down. I think I'm excited about the challenge.
You mentioned the first meeting. What was the team's reception when you go in there and you're kind of telling them? Because a lot of these guys have had, you know, plenty of different faces the last few years.
Yeah, that's always a little bit of a challenge. You know, it's really, you can tell by people's body language. You know, that's because most people aren't going to be rude to you, to your face, or say something. So I really judge it by people's body language. And then what I try to do is I try to back up. Like you said, I'm a special teams coordinator. So, of course, I'm going to get up and talk about the importance of special teams. And there's a lot of similarities in philosophies with all of us and those kind of things. So what I try to do, not try to do, what I do is I back it up with data. Okay, so I showed them in 2017, the Big Ten champions and the teams that played for the Big Ten championship, they also were top 2 in the conference in special teams units. I showed them in 2018, the teams that played for the Big Ten championship were also the top 2 units in special teams on their respective sides when you look at the special teams numbers. And it's the same thing in the NFL. I showed them the Super Bowl champions from 18, Super Bowl champions from 17, and the top 4 teams all were the final 4 in the playoffs. So there's a direct correlation. And then I talk to them about, you know, they don't want to hear too much about other places, but I talk to them about some of the things that we did at my previous stop. You know, one of the things when I first got to Memphis and I sat in a room just like this, and I was asked about it every single day. They had the longest kickoff return drought in the history of college football. It was a 20-year drought. They had not returned a kickoff for a touchdown. It was the longest in history. We broke the record in our last game there that we are now tied for the most ever in college football history with 8. So I don't say that to be like to brag. I'm saying I wanted to show these guys tangible evidence of the things that we can do if and when they buy into this philosophy. And before that, really, it was getting the coaches aligned and on board, and not to allude to the fact that they weren't, but I'm saying to come in here and establish the culture, because really it's not me. It's our deal. It has to be all the position coaches. It has to be the head coach. It has to be the team doctor. It has to be the equipment guys. Everybody has to understand and not undermine the importance of that and truly, truly believe in it. And when you have that culture on your football team, it's incredible what will happen. I've seen it numerous times.
Joe, could you share what your recruiting responsibilities will be in terms of positions and areas? And also, you've had a lot of success in Southern California. Do you think that could translate for a school like Penn State that traditionally has not gotten a lot of kids out of Southern California?
Yeah, I do think, you know, as long as I have deep ties there just because I've recruited there since 1999, I believe, so have a lot of relationships there. You know, recruiting's about relationships. Anytime you have those kind of relationships, you can lean on people to give you accurate information. So I do think that can be a help as we kind of call that out of our footprint, though. So I don't know how, you know, I don't know what that number looks like yet, but I do know that it's already come up a couple times where there's kids from California that have come here already or are planning on coming here, and I knew their high school coach, so I think I can help to bridge that gap. My recruiting area here, I have a piece of Pennsylvania. I don't know it good enough yet to tell you, like, it's Erie County, I believe. I'll have a part of Delaware, a part of Maryland, and then the Space Coast area of Florida. And then I'll national recruit for specialists. We'll get the very best specialists in the country to come here.
Coach, have you? I know you haven't been here for that long, but has there been anyone that you've seen that can really make an impact for you guys on defense and special teams?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of them. I wouldn't want to point out anybody specific because there's a whole bunch of them. I think there's a lot of really good players here. You know, obviously KJ stands out just because he's a really dynamic returner. You know, right when I started watching that last week, I texted Coach Franklin like, wow, you know, he said, I told you about that guy. So, I think that it's – and really in the system that I'm talking about, obviously you got to have good players. That's clear. But really it's like – it's collective, right? It's not just having one great returner. You know, we did the kickoff return thing at Memphis, but, you know, when you watch it, one of the things that I'm proud of, and I used to point this out to those guys all the time, is I'd pause the tape. And, yeah, we had a great returner. They had D'Angelo Williams before. He didn't score a touchdown. He's pretty good too, right? So it was the collective of the whole group that made a difference. And I think this roster is built with a lot of really good playmakers, and I think we can rely on some of the guys that are already playmakers on offense and defense, and I think we can develop and continue to develop a core group of guys that maybe they're not the best corner or safety or receiver or not the most experienced, you know, to be able to play, or they don't know the plays good enough yet, and they can have an impact on special teams, because special teams, you can't have lesser players, but they don't have to think as much, right? It's simpler. I'm not having to learn a really complicated playbook and then adjust if they're in cover two or cover three or cover four. There's so much more thinking on offense or defense than there is in special teams, so you can take a guy that's less experienced and they can play sooner.
Hi, Coach. Two questions. What are going to be your defensive responsibilities? And then you've known James for at least 20 years. Did you see his success coming, and was there an opportunity in the past 20 years where he may have hired you and it just didn't happen?
So your first question was what? I'm sorry.
Defensive responsibilities.
Yeah, okay. So defensive responsibilities. We're still working that out. You know, in the past, I've been a part of 3-4 schemes, and so we had an inside linebacker coach, an outside linebacker coach, secondary coach and a D-line coach, and I've always coached the outside linebackers. This structure is a little bit different because it's a 4-3 defense, and so there's not those extra kind of two guys. So right now I'm assisting just as needed. Today I'll be with Coach Pry. I've been in the meetings with him. But I'm very experienced with linebackers, safeties, and corners, so I think that I could kind of jump around to wherever is needed. I think they've talked about maybe some of the nickel stuff, what they call star, maybe getting a little bit of work with that outside linebacker Sam position. So I think a little bit of us just kind of feeling each other out at this point. And in answer to your question about Coach Franklin, yeah, we were roommates together at Idaho State back in 1999. I knew he was special from you can just tell the minute he walks in the room. He's extremely bright, very, very ambitious, always has been very ambitious, you know, dominates the room when he walks in. I mean, we all knew back then that he was going to do something special. I didn't, you know, obviously know where it would end up being. Pretty cool for him from where he's from to have this opportunity. He has not offered me a job in the past, but I felt like it was coming. You know, there's a coaches convention every year. Every year him and I would bump into each other and grab a cup of coffee and stuff, and I knew he was following what I was doing because he would always say, hey, I saw your game against Houston, or I saw your game against Stanford, or whatever it was. So I knew he was following my career, and I knew he had said good things to Mike Norvell, who was my head coach there, in the past. So I felt like an opportunity would probably come at some point. I just didn't know when.
We have time for two more. We'll start with Tyler.
You mentioned KJ a couple questions ago. We saw him get work at punt returner and kick returner last year. Curious what your philosophy is using the same guy as KJ at the level where that's going to be your initial approach. And additionally, we saw Jahan Dotson involved. DeAndre Tompkins, who's gone, was involved there. Who do you think, I know you didn't want to mention a bunch of specific names, but who do you really think you're going to put back there early in spring, see how they field punts, kicks, and get a feel for them?
Yeah, so what we'll do a thing called daily skill every single day that when we're not scrimmaging. And what it is, it's the kick returners catching the balls on one side, the punt returners catching the balls on the other side, and all the guys that you just mentioned will be there, and they'll flip every day. So not everybody, but the guys that do both will flip. So if I was catching punts one day, I'll catch kick returns the next day, and vice versa. But I can't really answer to it. They're all going to be back there. I'm going to evaluate them. I'm going to make sure the guys that are dynamic enough to play there. I also got to make sure we have guys that make great decisions. That's going to be really, really important that we make good decisions. We have two goals in special teams. Number one is to own the ball. Right, so that means on our coverage units, we're going to be attacking the ball, and on our return units, we're going to make great decisions to make sure that we're never giving up a possession for our offense, right? And number two is no penalties. So a big part of what we do, that's our only goals, okay? A big part of what we do is making sure that not only dynamic players, I think we'll have plenty of those, but also great decision makers in those situations.
General philosophy, no hesitancy to use the same guy in both roles if he earns that job?
Yeah, if he's the best guy, he's going to play. What our philosophy that Coach Franklin and the staff and I have discussed is making sure that guys don't start on more than two special teams units unless it's approved by the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and head coach. What I do, because you want to make sure you're not overusing guys and being selfish, which is kind of easy to do when you get a special player. What I do is weekly I will have a play count for the week and for the year, talking about in the season now, that will be distributed to Coach Franklin, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and myself, so we can say, hey, you know, make sure KJ played 11 special teams plays last week and he's played 34 on the year, and kind of manage that number. And then if a guy's sometimes you find out a guy's not being used, you know, like at Memphis, we had three really good running backs. So the head coach said, they rotate all the time, start them on four if they're good enough. So it's just going to vary with those kind of situations. But I do keep a very active play count to make sure we're not overusing or underutilizing a guy.
How you doing?
Good.
Question about freshmen. You mentioned being able to play people early because of the more simplistic side of special teams. Yeah. It seems like freshmen across the country are coming in ready to play earlier and earlier. Is that the same thing? And I want to ask specifically about the specialist positions, because it seems like there's more training physically and kind of infiltrating the high school side for offense and defense. Do you find specialist punters and kickers and things like that coming in as well prepared or more well prepared in the past?
No, I think that they're well prepared physically. The hard part for a specifically specialist is the mental side of it. There's lots of guys, tons and tons of guys that have good enough legs, right, for a punter or a kicker or good enough snappers. It's the mental side of the game that's really hard. It's very much like golf in that way. So that's where I think the challenge is when a guy comes in and he has to be in this environment and he was in high school 4 months ago. It's not undoable. I mean, I've had people do it, but in my experience, what I try to do, you know, you have to be somewhere for a while, obviously. But what I try to do is I try to be a year ahead in recruiting. So if I have a junior kicker, I had Jake Elliott, the kicker for the Eagles. So when he was a junior, I recruited and signed the guy that I knew was going to replace him. So he had a year to train under Jake, and then I was able to bring who is now Memphis's starting kicker, Riley Patterson. So, but he had that gave him a year to develop, figure things out, get stronger, focus on academics. There's so many things that come into play for these student athletes that, you know, especially when they first get there, they're getting used to time management, living away from home, the pressures of Division I football. There's so many things that they're dealing with that if you can give them a year to get acclimated, that's the ideal situation. It doesn't always work that way. But you try to do it that way.